Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Michael, who is here to speak with us about the upcoming 15th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for crossing over and joining us on this side of the show.
It's a pleasure. Great to be
That's
here.
That's fun.
It is fun.
So I think you're quite a veteran of the Bridge Walk. Have you been there every year?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I have. And I don't expect to miss it until the year I die.
Excellent. That there's the attitude. Well, it's 15 years. This will be the 15th annual. Amazing, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when we sort of realized last year, you know, we were at the 14th annual, and Sherry was really talking to folks at the end of that walk about how significant it is that we've, you know, passed a decade and a half together with our partners in Africa. And so we made the promise that we were going to keep it in the forefront of people's awareness throughout the year to really encourage people to join us and to participate in any way that they can. And so we've been regularly doing that on the Good News Updates and thought it would be fun to have you, since you are such a veteran and quite a fan of the project, to be with us this afternoon to talk about your experience and what, you know, what that's meant to you to get to participate in each of those bridge walks over the years.
Yes, yes. Shall I jump right in?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. I've been reflecting on it, and I'd like to step back a little bit, a little higher level, and that is for me starting with this great practice that has been given to me, and that for me has saved my life. And it's interesting because, you know, just when we started, I said, you know, I expect to come to the Bridge Walk every year for as long as I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And so with this practice, it feels like it's a sacred obligation to continue to make this practice available. We've often talked about, you know, the debt of the practice being given to us, and to repay that increasing debt is to make that available for those that come after us.
Yeah, beautifully, beautifully put. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And so it seems to me that this project in Africa comes from that sacred obligation that so much has been given to me, to all of us in this Sangha, that really, you know, we just want to give and give. And right. Sherry made that incredible connection in Cantalamba with Father John, and you were there with Teresa asking, you know, what would she do if she could?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's all grown from that.
Yeah, boy, so true. Yeah, gratitude wants to give. And from that yes, you know, from that very first yes, where I love the story. I'm sure, you know, we'll get Sherry to tell it in some context of this 15th anniversary, but, you know, there she was in Assisi in Italy, you know, and life put in front of her this invitation, and of course she said yes, and it's all stemmed from that initial yes.
Yes, yes, it is fun to see how each step leads to the next, and it feels like a foundation grows with each of those yeses, and the practice builds upon itself, and you and Sherry and the Sangha, you know, show up there every year, you know, often several times a year, and the commitment that you bring to practice and that Sherry brings to practice really creates this incredible foundation that I think we all build on, you know, the Sangha in Africa and the Sangha here, and that gets stronger and stronger over time. And then we see, you know, after 12, 14 years, you know, feeding, 1,000 kids a day now, and kids are being educated, and the girls program, and it just brings tears to my eyes to, you know, hear about all of it. Mm-hmm. It's just great.
And, you know, as you're talking, Michael, I'm just seeing so much how it's such a circle, isn't it? It's so symbiotic, because that what you were talking about of, you know, this practice having saved your life and meant so much to you, and that place of that obligation to give, to pay that debt with the same coin. And it's so amazing, because the difficulty, and I'm using that word sort of tongue in cheek, that we get into is that the more we attempt to give back, the greater the depth of our receiving. And so it's just that place of, you know, the Buddha practiced until the day he died. We can guess partly from that place of wanting to offer what he'd received, but also because we must, right? That we always want to be in that place of practice. And that's the thing that's such an amazing gift of the whole thing, is that it feels like the community in Cantalumba offers this generous service of allowing us a way to participate in life in this incredibly inspiring way, right? And everyone just stands there and looks at each other and says, no, thank you, no, thank you, no, thank you. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. Yes. And it feels like what I get from our folks in Africa is just incredible inspiration of what they are doing, and those girls showing up, and, you know, the picture of all of them wanting to be nurses, and, you know, the ones who want to be lawyers, and the ones who want to be doctors. And it's just great. It's, you know, in the privileged life that I live, to have that kind of inspiration given to me regularly from the Sangha there and from the Sangha here, and to bring it back to the bridge walk, makes me want to show up there every year and do my part to say, this is important to me.
Yeah. Boy, I got goosebumps as you were talking, because, you know, there are those girls in those pictures, and they want to be nurses, and they want to be lawyers, and they want to be, and they can be now. You know, it's not just I want to be, you know, fly to the Mars. And, I mean, they can be. It can happen. It is happening. You know, the children of the cooperative members are now going and getting degrees that are going to allow them to have really good jobs that will support their whole families. That was not happening 10 years ago, you know? I mean, it just, thank you for that.
yes, exactly so. And for me, to bring it back to awareness, you know, what you were talking about is showing these girls the way to get from A to B. You know, I want to be a nurse. Yeah. And what practice offers and what you're offering for these girls programs is, okay, if you want to be a nurse, here are the steps to being a nurse.
Yes.
And giving them every support along the way to do that.
Yes. And you're unknowingly, Michael, making a very brilliant, beautiful hint segue into what the campaign, I'm not going to talk about the campaign in particular, but it's very fun. We're in the next stages, as we always are, of looking at, you know, what is going to be, what's on the next horizon for the project. And that's going to be a big piece of what's coming up, is connecting those pieces. Okay, we now have the clean water. We now have nutrition. We now have the educational supports in place. What are the next things that are going to be needed? And there's going to be a lot of connecting up those dots with practice, with the things that support all of us in achieving what we want to achieve in our lives. So it's going to be a really fun campaign. Hopefully, you know, starting somewhere around early July and leading up to October 15th. Isn't that fun? I only just the other day made that connection. The 15th annual Bridge Walk is on October 15th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that fun? So, you know, we do have to turn the show over to you and Sherry in just a minute, but maybe, Michael, just kind of saying a few words about the day itself and what that's meant to you in terms of participating in those days.
Sure. It's it's always great to get together in person with Sangha and to be together with people who value this project. And it's a special form of the privileged environment to me, because we are together and we're out in public and we are talking, and yet I project that there's still a deep sense of sensitivity and care for each other and how we interact, and being mindful of what we, you know, what we're communicating and how we're communicating. And it's a gorgeous location, and it's a lovely walk. And I don't know any group of people who can't be brought together by drumming.
Really simple skill.
Yeah, that's easily taught and brings everybody together, and it's just fabulous.
Yeah, and it's so fun that it's also such a family event that, I mean, for example, your two boys who are now, I was thinking about that today, probably getting close to as tall as me, were not even a twinkle in anyone's eye, as they say, when we were first coming together. So it's really fun to see all the, you know, kids who have grown up really through the years with all of our little guys in Cantalumba who have grown up, you know, so they're these kind of parallel tracks. That's just makes it so such a fun, festive, celebratory day.
Yes, it does. It's fabulous.
Yeah, and as you alluded to, you know, so there's coming with us and being with us in person that day, which, you know, Sherry keeps saying this, and we're all right there, as many folks as can do that this year, and really physically being with us for that grand celebration is beautiful. And we will be laying out all the ways for people wherever you are to participate from where you are for this bridge walk season. So very, very exciting.
Great. Great. Very exciting.
So, Michael, thank you for being with us this afternoon and speaking so articulately to that. That was really fun to hear.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And I guess we'll just say carry on and have a great show.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Michael.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Wasn't that fun?
It was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
I love it. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
I was can I tell you something I was looking at while you two were talking?
Please.
All right. So, you know, in my position in the Sangha, I get to tell the, you know, walking barefoot 25 miles to school in the snow, uphill both directions. But I mean, some people know this because it's, I think I've actually written about it. But when I was when I wanted to go into the monastery where I trained, I needed to live somewhere close so that I could participate, and then I needed to make enough money to be able to do that, and then I wanted to. Make a contribution to the monastery because in that visiting monk sort of way, you know, they fed me and they were training me and all of that. So I wanted to make a contribution, and I did stuff, you know, picked apples and cleaned houses and did all sorts of things so that I could be there and practice. And when you two were talking, I thought about those kids in Cantalumba. And the position that they're in. Now, of course, there was something that I wanted more than anything in this world, which was to be able to be at that monastery and train full time. And these kids are looking at this, I can't imagine what kind of goal it looks like for them. And when you were saying about practice with the step-by-step, you know, you want to be a nurse? Okay, this is what you do. And now they're placed, you know, we're putting in place the support for that. There's somebody who will say, okay, well, this is what you need to do next, and you need to get these grades, and you need to, you know, all of those kinds of things so that they can realize an equally important goal or vision that they have for their lives. And I was talking with a group of people recently who are participating in a retreat with me, and there were things coming up that for us to do, and some of the people were saying, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford to do that. And my response was, we're talking about something 5 or 6 months in the future. You know, of course you can afford to do it. How can you not afford to do it? I mean, there are so many ways to come. I mean, we live in the United States of America. There are so many ways to come up with money that
you know, it's just the list would be endless. But it's so easy for us to get talked into a place of well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at what's possible for me right here, and so no, I can't see how something would be possible for me in the future, because in the future I'll be where I am now, and to see how karmic conditioning, how that system talks us into those kinds of limitations, that fear-based limitation and no possibility. And so if it, you know, for me, it's you know, when I say I wish everybody would come to the bridge walk, and what I know a lot of people go to is, well, I can't do that. I can't take off work, and I can't afford that. And, you know, it's a plane ticket, or I've got to find a hotel, or, you know, that's just, I can't do that. And to go to a place of, yes, I can do that, because that's the attitude of mind and heart I want for those kids in Cantalumba. I don't want them to look at their lives and then look out a year or 5 years or 10 years or 15 years and assume that they're going to be in the same place then that they are now. We want them to look out and say, anything is possible for us. How do we get there? Help, you know, what are the steps? What do I need to do to get from where I am now to where I want to be? Right? And for all of us to be looking at that every day of our lives, rather than turning to conditioned mind for its assessment, its fear-based assessment of what's possible for us, to realize everything is possible. Everything is possible for all of us all the time.
Yes, yes. And the place I went when you were sharing that is that I can see that that's possible for them and for those girls. And so yeah. Let me own that projection, bring it back, and as you were saying, see what's big and possible for me.
Yes, yes. So that we really are all walking together into possibility. Whatever that is for each and every one of us, because as far as I can tell, that's what the world needs, is people who are living in possibility, who are saying yes to whatever life offers us, and not just saying yes to what conditioned mind is offering us, right? Because those are not the same thing at all.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Great. Great.
Yeah. So thank you for that. And, oh, one other thing. I want to get this picture out for this bridge walk, and it is your little wife and your firstborn, and he is in a sling, right, on her chest, this little tiny guy. And we got to find that picture, just to one of those. Oh, it has been a long time. And then get him to stand next to the picture. Get a picture of that.
Oh, that would be fun. Get a picture of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get them all
right.
Together for that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry. And I have announcements here.
Oh, good. Forgot about those.
Yeah. Virtual meditation groups are a unique way to enjoy the support and connection of meditating with Sangha. These conference call meditation sessions include a 30-minute sit and a reading from one of your books, Sherry.
Mm.
And for a full schedule, please visit the virtual meditation group webpage.
We never have to be alone, do we? We never have to feel like, oh, I'm the only person meditating in my part of the world. Well, that could be true, but we can connect up with people all over the world and meditate.
Yes, we can. And the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats offer an opportunity to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
These foundational retreats in North Carolina, June 30th through July 7th, and at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, August 3rd through 10th, are perfect for beginners and experienced practitioners alike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get past those you can't voices.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. The what you practice is what you have retreat grounds participants in the work of ending self-hate and the practice of recording and listening.
Mm-hmm.
This one-of-a-kind retreat from July 15th through the 22nd at the Zen Monastery Peace Center is an advanced retreat and requires a deep grounding in Zen awareness practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And is a heck of a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Hey, Michael, before are you finished with that part?
Yes, I am.
Okay, because I have a little announcement. I just remembered. I have a little assignment.
Okay.
The Zen Monastery Peace Center, beautiful place that it is looking a little ragged around the edges, and that is because we have been blessed with so much rain this year that we actually have things growing there outside the garden. And so we would love to invite people who are close enough to do this and, you know, have a relationship with the monastery to come and lend a hand, sprucing it up and getting it ready for retreat season, although there'll be a retreat before we get to it, but they'll just have to be understanding. So to arrive as early as possible on June 8th, which is a Wednesday, and then plan to stay through group on that Sunday if you can, which is the 11th, the 12th. Sunday the 12th.
Yep.
And anybody who can come up, we'll feed you. Just bring work clothes and gloves and things like that, and we'll feed you and give you a bed, and you can participate in the joyful work of maintaining our beautiful monastery.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
So you said come up as early as possible on Wednesday, June 8th, and stay through Sunday the 12th. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yes, if people can, that would be our ideal. You know, it's nice if everybody kind of gets there at the same time and leaves at the same time. It makes it easy for cooks and people making beds and things like that. So, all hands welcome.
Good. And so those folks should email the guest master at information@livingcompassion.org.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes would be really helpful.
All right.
Okay. You ready, Sherry?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Chris in Seattle.
Well, hello, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. What's going on?
Well, I was listening yesterday to a show from last October or so, and you had encouraged a caller to sort of begin a mantra of, I choose unconditional love. And then you went further and described a way to do it, which was to get the recorder and record themselves saying, I choose unconditional love, and then pause, and then say it again, and then pause. And so that, and then the idea, the way I understood it was, when you listen to it, you listen to it, and then during the pause, you say it to yourself, and then it pops back on, you listen to it again, and then do that over and over and over. I thought that was really interesting. So I did that this morning. I had my coach call last night, and then I made a commitment to do it this morning. And I sat down and I made a 20-minute recording of just that. And then I've been doing the practice of that pretty much all day today.
Uh-huh.
And it's been interesting. I've been seeing a whole lot of really great stuff about everything.
Can you tell us a little about what you've been seeing?
Well, sure. My first I recorded like 30 seconds of it, and just to see how long the pause was and check it out. And the first time listening to it was just brought up a lot of emotion. It was just really neat. And then I recorded the whole thing, and then I saw just after I've been doing it, listening for, I don't know, a while, all the distraction kind of thoughts that come in really started coming in all the time in between the tenth of a second between the end of the recording and when I say it myself. I mean, just continuous, and it was interesting just to see how much all that stuff I think about during the day is just stuff I think about during the day. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's just
it's just mind clutter.
Yes, and having the focus on that one sentence identifies everything else as just, like you could say, mind clutter. And I just go back and forth. And I was off running some errands, so I still kept it in my ear and turned the volume down. So there were times when I could just barely hear it, and I'd be talking to somebody, and then I'd turn the volume back up, and I'd it's just been a great day because I've been out of the conversation all day long. I suspect I could record,
yes,
I really like Star Trek, and say that over and all day and have a similar experience, in that it would keep my mind off of,
yes,
everything else.
The mind clutter. Yes. Uh-huh. So two things about that. One, isn't it sobering, impressive, startling, whatever we want to say, how devoted conditioned mind is to controlling our attention?
Yeah.
It's shocking, isn't it? Because when we're not attempting to interfere with it, it just seems like it's just, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do along, you know, little random thoughts here and there, and you notice this, and the voice says that, and then you're thinking about something from junior high, and then you see, you know, and it just seems like this innocuous little my life.
Uh-huh.
And then you decide that you're going to be an active, conscious, choosing participant in your own mental process. Uh-huh. And it's like, no, no, you are not. Nope, 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 nope.
Yeah.
I love seeing that.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then I also noticed this, I had a couple of interactions with some people, and I know they were the kind of interactions that could lead to a, you know, stewing and thinking about stuff, and they just disappeared because in the background I've got, you know, I choose unconditional love, and it'd be like a little reminder because the thoughts would start to take over a little bit, but eventually I'll hear it just every few,
yes,
seconds or so. I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing that, and then I just came,
yes,
right back to it.
Yes, which is an argument for choosing unconditional love over Star Trek.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because, you know, I like Star Trek. Well, that's really interesting information, but if I'm in the process of stewing over an interaction that I have with this person, that might not bring me back as quickly, yep, as the fact that I'm choosing love instead of stress, strife. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yet, I'm not negating your point. Anything that interferes with that system's brainwashing program is going to assist us.
Yes, and some things will be perhaps more effective at assisting us than others.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. Now what you'll get to watch is how that system starts a campaign to get you not to listen to that.
I know it. I know it's coming, but I'm just going to keep sticking with it as much as I can and see how it goes. It should be.
Yes, yeah, and report back.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I will do that.
All right, good. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sherry. Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night.
Yeah, you're breaking up there, Chris. Sherry, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to meet Chris now. Okay.
Yeah, he said goodnight, so he's
okay. Good. And I think we're ready for our next caller here.
Good, yeah.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Carolyn in Seattle. Well,
hi.
Seattle, there's a lot going on in Seattle tonight. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous in so many ways, and just so grateful to just follow through with my getting into the queue and, you know, thy will, but, you know, thy will, not mine, be done here. And, wow, I'm so excited.
And here you are.
Here I are. recently, wow, I feel like I've been on an intensive retreat over the last couple of weeks. The way that life has presented incredible practice opportunities, which started most dramatically with the passing on of a 17-year-old beloved pet. And, yeah, who I had the pleasure of being the guardian of for 14 years. And, you know, we knew this was coming. This was not a surprise, but the huge hole in the in the fabric of our lives that this created, it's just a big hole. And thinking about experiencing grief and sadness and knowing, you know, I've been alive long enough in this life to have had, you know, many losses of people and animals and relationships and jobs and, you know, the losses that come with life. And curious how, you know, and really being asked by, you know, the mentor and being invited to be with the experience of the sadness just as it is without launching into, you know, the story that conditioned mind wants me to launch into, which generally has, it's like a train with a whole bunch of boxcars of this loss and then what happened there and then that loss and why didn't I do that and, you know, the big giant freight car line of stories. So just looking for some guidance around how to work with memories and not get bamboozled by conditioning. I mean, what, you know, trying to, you know, be with the experience of the sadness and let myself experience the sadness, which is absolutely present, and then being aware of when the sadness is morphing into the suffering of the conditioned mind is always at the ready to launch.
First of all, I think what you've noticed about this is really important for us all to notice, and that is at least it's my experience too, and it's yours. So there are two of us, and I bet there are more. That when we have a loss, it brings up all the previous losses. Right?
Yes.
So it's
I think that
we can see in that a lot about how conditioned mind works, how it makes connections and creates relationships between things. And so it's particularly particularly noticeable when it's such a painful subject. So then it's going to go back to other times when you felt like this and other, which is one process. The other one that you mentioned that is also something I'm sure we all share, which is how quickly that conversation and conditioned mind wants to jump in with what's wrong, right? And review how that didn't go the way it should have, or what was just what was wrong with that. and what was wrong with you in that situation to create the suffering. So it seems to me, what I'm hearing you say is, you know, you're kind of onto the whole process, that there's what arises in the moment. You know, you just walk into the house and your friend isn't there, and maybe you're not aware that that's going to be the case until you get in the house, because sometimes we're not aware, and then all of a sudden you're there and it kind of hits you. And there's that experience, and then just watching for how quickly conditioned mind wants to grab that experience and turn it into suffering, turn it into a problem, something wrong.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what we do is recognize that, drop it, and come back to this experience. And I think one of the great sadnesses of that is that so often we're not allowed to grieve. I mean, we have to work really hard to grieve, right? Because that system is trying to pull us out of our actual direct experience and into a story.
You know, another component of the process is, you know, it's just so crafty, conditioned mind. I mean, it is just a master of manipulation and of disguise. Because, you know, there can be the experience of, you know, like you said, walking into the house, the dog's not here, was thinking about something else, and just that whack right in the heart of, oh, my God, where is she? And then remembering and then being sad. What can happen for me is I need to go find another dog. I need to jump online and get on Pet Finder and search for another perfect dog and you know, to avoid just being with the experience of the sadness. That is another piece of it that, you know, I'm noticing. My health conditioned mind wants to narcotize the suffering, the pain, the raw emotion of sad.
Yes, doesn't want you to have a real experience. You know, that's the manipulation, right? Wants you to have a story that it creates, not for you to just have your experience and move through it, which is what's possible for us. So my projection, of course, is that you go out there and you get that next dog. And, of course, that's going to be the biggest mistake in the world, because this new dog isn't like that dog, and why did you do that?
Yeah.
And you can't just replace somebody with somebody else, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, then there's also no information about, and if you just make a relationship with this new dog, you know, you're going to fall in love in the same way, and that's true, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other little story that can get watched is, you don't want to get another dog, because if you get another dog, you're going to feel this pain again, because you're going to outlive the dog. And it's masterful. And so it's like,
got an angle.
You know, I mean, it's like, stop it. So it's been so interesting. You know, I was talking to my awesome coach, And I think it was she who said, you know, it's like you've been on this, like, intense workshop, you know, this last couple of weeks. And there have been some other things some other life experiences besides losing my dog at work and when I was traveling, some flies in the ointment that conditioned mind was very ravenous to devour and make into a big drama.
Yeah.
But thanks to you, the sangha, the practice, the mentor, you know, I was able to, like, step back and laugh at the human comedy of how many things can go wrong, you know, quote-unquote, and not get sucked into that incredible tornado and that weather. You know, be able to step back and see, oh, there's some sky here, and I don't want to forget that right now. So just grateful for the practice, and
you put your arms around the person and say,
this is a truly miserable time, isn't it? And, you know, let's do the best we can to get through it together, which is a completely different life experience from what conditioning wants to do to us. So, yeah, because with that, within that, there are things that are funny. There are times when, in spite of the fact that you just lost your little buddy, it doesn't change the fact that this other thing that's happening over here is completely absurd and ridiculous. And you can let yourself laugh at it, and it doesn't take anything away from the amount of love you had for that little critter.
That's right. You know, and, you know, what continually rings, and, you know, why I love practice is because, you know, we practice for times like this. You know, this is what the go-to is, that life is happening for me, not to me.
Yes.
You know, that
came
to mind. You know, I was down in the Bay Area a couple last week and running I'm a runner, and I was running in a race, and halfway through the race in the Golden Gate Park, I lost my phone. It slipped out of my little carrier, and I didn't even notice it for another mile, and of course, it was long since gone. And I just, my first thought was, of course, a couple of expletives, which I will not repeat here, followed immediately by, this is too funny. I mean, how does these things happen? Well, I'm not going to let it ruin my time here. I'll figure it out. It will be an adventure, and it was. And, you know, and that's the beauty of practice. You know, I feel like thanks to connecting with the work that you all, the foundation that you all so beautifully laid down for all of us, that my total reaction to life has so been transformed. And for that, I'm just so deeply grateful. I just want to say thank you for doing what you do, and Michael and the whole crew down there that makes this all happen for us, flung across the world, and to the Sangha for you know, doing what you're doing wherever you are. And I just look forward to being down there for the bridge walk in October. I'm looking at airfares already, so thank
you. Oh, well, thank you. And now, of course, I know that this is not the point, but did you get your phone back?
No. It's a long, funny story. It's a
workshop.
It was the epitome of Murphy's Law. You know, the bread always falls with the jelly side down. I mean, it just went on and on. And boy, we've become very, very attached to these little gizmos. And boy, I really recognized it. Woo! But, hey, I got, you know, it all worked out, and it's a great story, and I was able to laugh at conditioned mind, which, as you have often said, you know, egocentric karma conditioning.
Best thing we can do.
Loads when we laugh at it. And so I just feel so deeply blessed for the incredible tools that I have been offered through, you know, your work, your writing, and
that you're using. Which is the important part of it, isn't it? Yeah.
That's right.
You've been offered
those
tools, and you're using them, and it's changing your life.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I got to pick them up.
That makes me happy.
I've got to have the willingness. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay.
Good deal.
Well, I'm going.
Well,
I'm
thank
going,
you.
Oh, thank you. And deep bow of gratitude to all of you, and until we meet again.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carolyn. That was a great feel-good conversation, Sherry. I loved it.
You know, the thing about it is, I really value memorable. You know? Those kinds of things, and they're almost always the situations where that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate wants to make a tragedy out of, right?
Yes.
But of all the runs in all the places, that one is never going to be forgotten, right? Because it's memorable. It's just a great, as you say, a great story. You know, it's a great, It's a great being there. And this is what happened. And of course, when it's the this is what happened, and this is what I saw, and this is what I realized, and this is the experience I had, it's great. Oh, it's the best. Mm-hmm. I bet you have somebody you want us to listen to, huh, besides me.
I do. And first I want to tell you a quote that reminded me of recently.
Oh, wow. Huh.
It's not an adventure until something goes wrong. I just love that.
That is great. It's true.
Yes.
That's what makes it an adventure.
And that's what makes it memorable.
I love that.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Love it.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, sir.
And now we're going to hear from our sponsor, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have our next caller here, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth. How are you?
A little bit of... I dialed in late and had no hope of getting on. But here I am.
Look what happened.
If I just wait 90 seconds, these hormones will kind of just settle down.
Good. Okay.
But I've noticed a couple of things about recording and listening.
Uh-huh.
Had a relationship with the listening. And I've kind of seen kind of like... it's like if I make a particular kind of recording, it only lasts for a certain period of time before my ego kind of works through it and kind of sees through it. So, like, the recording kind of keeps it on its toes.
Yes. Now, first of all, of course, I'm going to ask you not to own that ego, right? It's not your ego. It's just this thing that has attached itself to your life. But aside from that, so yes. So we get a practice. We do something for a while, and then conditioned mind goes to work on it, right? Trying to get us to not respond in the same way, be distracted, lose interest, lose our recorder, whatever.
Right. But the other side is also true, in that habit is my best friend.
Yes.
And just hitting
conscious
the button
habit.
On a particular conscious habit.
Conscious habit, right?
Conscious habit, yeah. I do have some habits that have become my good friends.
Yes.
Like for me, picking up a broom. All I have to do is touch the broom and I immediately calm. Because I've been using sleeping as working meditation since my first visit to the monastery.
Well, that's
so
lovely.
It's like, so both sides seem to be true. One is you have to keep kind of going forward with new recordings because conditioning sees through them, and at the same time, old recordings are instantaneous.
Yes, well, that's what you're saying is really interesting because you didn't stop sweeping.
No.
Right? You never stopped sweeping. And
no.
Sweeping is easily as vulnerable to being called boring as
yeah.
any recording, right? But you
right.
didn't stop. Yeah.
Right. No, there were many years where it was not fun.
Uh-huh, but you just kept doing it.
Well, kind of working meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, it's, in the beginning, it was kind of like just continually coming back to the breath. Here I am, I'm just sleeping. And now it's, I don't have to think about it. Now
yes.
it's just.
Sweeping is sweeping.
Sweeping is sweeping. There's no magic in it.
Mm-hmm.
Except that it has become a very useful tool.
Except that it's really magical.
Yeah. And there is always something mm-hmm. to sweep. So I never
mm-hmm.
run out of opportunity
mm-hmm.
kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really true. There's nothing magical about it, and it's completely magical, which is true with anything that we approach with the same attitude of mind-heart or heart-mind.
Oh, I didn't even hear that. I tried.
Well, with recording and listening, there's nothing magical about it. We get out of it exactly what we put into it.
Yeah.
So it's the attitude of mind and heart that we bring to it that makes it magical. And that attitude of mind and heart makes everything magical.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking earlier about, you know, like the possibility thinking. And my pursuit of health is costing me everything I've got. And, yeah, but, you know, what else is there? And my...
How do you mean costing you everything you've got? Could you say a little about that?
Okay, well,
financially, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically.
Yeah. I have to change everything. Everything that goes in my mouth has to be put into my mouth with consideration. It's taking, you know, financially, it's like being, you know, in high school again. You know, $20 lasts me a week. But it's also monastic. I can't afford anything, so I just come home and sit.
Uh-huh.
I've noticed that if I just leave, then money just kind of dribbles out of your pocket. But if you sit at home, it just sits there. It's kind of like as my health is getting stronger, I just can't make my life work. I've been trying for 50 years, and I just can't make my life work. So on the one hand, things are kind of getting harder and falling apart. But on the other hand, I'm healthier now than before I got my diagnosis.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And can you tell me what I can't make my life work means?
Well, I remember you once saying, if you really want something, go out and get it. And I did. I wanted a home. I went out and got it. I can't keep it.
Uh-huh.
I'm making the same amount of money I did, you know, 5 years ago, but all of a sudden, it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all of a sudden, it kind of happened over time. And it has nothing to do with me. We
mm-hmm.
live in an, you know, the Buddha said, you know, society is insane, and it continues to be so.
And so I can't make my life work means I can't get results other than what's happening?
Lifestyle. I'm never going to have the ideal that was given to me as a child.
Uh-huh. Which has come to
yeah.
mean my life working, me making my life work.
You go out and you make money, you come home, you pay, you know, for the house, you pay for the electricity, you pay, you know, all the bills, you put food on the table. That lifestyle, I just can't make work.
Anymore.
We talked about this a little bit before in a conversation where, you know, just have the guys come in the truck and get rid of everything. And I've been kind of looking at that and just all the resistance to it. And it seems like life is calling me to be the peace pilgrim. And I don't see her being, you know, miserable.
No.
But I don't want it.
Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can't, there's a part of me that is panicking. I can't make my life work. And there's another part that's just kind of curious.
Well, are you open to different phrasing?
Yes, I'm open to letting go of the drama.
Well, because what you said is you accepted an idea when you were a child about
yeah.
how life is. And it turns out that that idea is not matching your life circumstances.
Right.
Now, it sounds like there was an overlay. Gosh, I wonder where it came from. Possibly from egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. That idea about how life should be was up to you to make happen. And if you didn't make it happen that way, then there's something wrong with you and with life.
Yes. Yeah, I hear that. I see that. I see that that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and that idea that you took on in childhood never was true.
No. No. And
it's kind of like, it's like life expectancy, you know, which is one of my favorite bizarre notions. That people actually get into believing that because the statistics say if you're a female, you can expect to live this long, and if you're a male, you can expect to live this long. And people think that that's a guarantee, right? And
yeah.
that if you don't meet that number, then there's really something wrong. And, of course, self-hate would be happy to accuse the person having the experience of being the problem. But the whole thing is made up. There's no truth to it.
There's no truth to it, yeah. Guy in China just died at 258 years old.
A guy in China just died at age 258?
That's what they say.
Yeah. Well, they say a lot of things, I bet, don't they?
Yeah. yeah. But the idea that life expectancy is this long, who knows?
That's right. I mean, we certainly know. I just heard a statistic, if I can, and I don't even know if it's current, but like 5% in this country, in whatever year, 5% of the people will retire with enough money to retire on. Something like 36% of the people will be dead. Okay. And then this other is people who, then there's a percentage who never retire because they can't afford to, so they keep working. And then there's an alarming, I wish I could remember what it is, of people who will be dependent upon family and friends and society to support them because they can't support themselves. Now, that's probably not anybody's childhood dream except for the 5% who think they're well poor, right?
Wow, yeah.
So we buy these ideas, we buy into these ideas, conditioned mind gets hold of them, and then we feel really ripped off if it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go. But there never was a supposed to go.
Yes, it is true. My clinging to this is causing me a great deal of suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the place where we can all relate is it's listening to those stories, right? But listening to those stories of what's wrong keep us from being able to appreciate what is. And there's always something to appreciate in what is. Always.
There's always something to appreciate in what is.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because, it's like these. When I wake up, these voices are there. And the mornings when I, start my day out with my habits, then I can appreciate, the sun's going down right now and there's some color in the clouds, the birds, just all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I'm listening to the stories, there's no birds.
That's right.
Yep. So there's nothing wrong with it.
I mean, that's beautifully put. I mean, it's like a little negative haiku, right? When I'm listening to the voices, there are no birds.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing that we're not meant to realize is I could be anywhere doing anything. I could be, anywhere doing anything. And if I'm listening to the voices, there are no birds. I could be 25, rich, healthy, thin, beautiful. And if I'm listening to the stories, there are no birds.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to be that. And there were no birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes, we could allow ourselves to wonder if these circumstances are life's way of requiring us to hear the birds, to choose the birds.
I'm willing to do anything life wants me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And life, only thing life wants me to do is listen to the birds.
Yeah. And there's the wisdom of Chris Christopherson brought to us by Janis Joplin. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
I'm pretty free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then our trick, our work, our possibility, our opportunity is to enjoy the freedom. Now, if we're listening to the stories, there's no freedom.
And this leaves me again with just saying thank you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Beth, it might be a wonderful time to pick up some of those old Zen favorites, Ryokan, or folks like that,
okay,
who have who are in life circumstances. You could say that they chose them, but they're not easy. And how they make peace with those circumstances and find the beauty in them.
It's seems like the only path to freedom.
Yes. Whatever our circumstances. You know, that's another thing that we buy that isn't true. We believe, deeply believe, that if our circumstances were different, we would be having a different experience. But when we're honest with ourselves, we know that that's not true. Because our circumstances have been different.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've had, just this image of coming in like this. I had dinner at Chasen's with Jane Fonda when I was 23. It was a $700 meal. So, that's not as good as just seeing the color of the flower.
Mm-hmm.
That dinner at Chasen's, I wasn't happy. I remember having a big fight and crying that night.
Mm.
And that's not happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. So it does seem to come down to life with stories, life without stories. And the question, the deep burning question we're left with, is there life with stories?
After 50 years, I can definitely say there's not. It's true. It's true. And they are just stories.
Yeah.
It's amazing how I get caught in them.
Yeah, we do. You're not alone in that.
Willingness is the key.
It sure as heck is. And the way is clear. Beyond the gate of thought and desire.
There is no self and other. It's the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness. Flips into all consciousness.
Yeah. There might be something for us in that, huh? You are so welcome. You take good care of yourself, okay?
Down the road.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. And Sherry, we're at 5:57 p.m.
I think we better call it, don't you?
Call it a night then, huh?
I think we better call it a night. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you next week. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.